Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Pei Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur on Daf Pei Zayin, 9 lines from the top, at the point at which the Gemara begins following the Mishnah. In our previous shiur, we learned the Mishnah, and the Gemara will pick up from one of the points mentioned in the Mishnah. Specifically, the Mishnah described at the beginning a Bas Yisrael who married a Kohen, had a child from the Kohen, and then the husband died. She then married a Levi, had a child with him. The husband died, and she married a Yisrael, and had a child with him. The Mishnah went on to describe that scenario where the children that the Bas Yisrael had with the Yisrael and with the Levi, those children died, leaving the Bas Yisrael with a son from the Kohen. So that, without going over all of the details of the Mishnah, but the Bas Yisrael, when she had married the Kohen, she gained rights to eat truma, and with the bearing of a child with the Kohen, even though the husband died, the child gave her truma eating rights. In the course of time, with the other marriages and births, she lost the truma rights, but with the death of the children from the Levi and the Yisrael, we saw that that Bas Yisrael mother went back to eating truma because she was left with her Kohen son. So the Gemara wants to focus on that. This whole idea of the woman going back to eating truma as in the merit of her having a son from the Kohen, even though, as we said, her husband, the Kohen, was dead already. So our Gemara. By the way, we have a little arrow that indicates to look back at Pei Vav Amid Beis, and if you have Pei Vav Amid Beis in front of you, you can see the second line from the bottom of Pei Vav Amid Beis where this Gemara is picking up from. So, Mace Bino Milevi, the Bas Yisrael, happened to have had a son also from the Levi, and the son died after the child from the Yisrael died. Toichal Betruma, the mother is able to eat truma because of her son, the son from the Kohen. The Hodra Ochla Mishum Bino Minolan. From where do we know this idea of a Bas Yisrael being able to return to truma eating in the merit of her son, the son that she had with her Kohen husband? The Gemara answers, Omar Rav, the Pasuk says, Bas Ubas. We should, by all means, look at the side of the Gemara where we have written in psukim that are relevant to our Gemara from Vayikra, Perek, Chof Beis, Psukim Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel. On the side we have written, Uvas Kohen Ki Siyah Li'ish Zor, He B'Trumas HaKodoshim Lo Sochel. If you're dealing with a daughter of a Kohen, who, though she comes from a Kohen household which is entitled to eat Truma, when she marries a non-Kohen, she loses that right. And Pasuk Yud Gimel, Uvas Kohen Ki Siyah Almono Grusha, V'Zera Ein Lo, V'Shova El Beis Oviha Kinurea. A Bas Kohen, when she becomes a widow or divorced, and she has no children from the husband that was a non-Kohen, so she's left without children from them. V'shova el beis aviyah kinura, she goes back to her father's house as she was beforehand. Milechem aviyah sochel, v'cholzar lo yochal bo. She goes back to eating from the food that her father was eating from them, the truma tithes that he was receiving. But a zar is not allowed to eat from that. A zar is a non-kohen. In the pasuk that we just read, we saw the word ubas kohen. The vav of that would appear to be the source of including not just a bas kohen, but a bas Yisrael that happens to have a son from a kohen. That's what Rabbi Abba said in the name of Rav. Bas ubas. The Gemara asks, Keman, Kerabi Akiva, Dedorish Vavi, is this halacha then based on the opinion of just Rabbi Akiva, who places an emphasis on the extra vav in a word? He is the one that's known to darshan the vav. The Gemara says afilu tema rabbanan. We don't have to limit this ruling to the shita, to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. We can say even according to the rabbanan, kula ubas kro yaserahu. The entire word at the beginning of Pasuk Yud Gimel is in effect an extra word. Being that in Pasuk Yud Beis, the subject of the verse was a Bas Kohen, it was possible to write this verse, Pasuk Yud Gimel, without the entire word Ubas, so that when it comes to making drushes, when it comes to expounding on verses, we aren't limiting ourselves in this case to Rabbi Akiva, who places emphasis on a singular letter vav, but rather when it comes to an entire extra word, that's something that even the Rabbanon would agree is the source of new information. And in this case, it is the source of the halacha that a Bas Yisrael that has a son from a Kohen can resume eating truma because in the merit of her son. When we say resume, we're talking about a scenario where she had been married afterwards. After she was married to the Kohen and had the child, she was married then to other men, at which point she had to stop eating the truma. The Gemara continues, and maybe before we continue with the Gemara itself, we glance at the side. We have a Nosei Mivneh heading. You'll see a triangle featured, and this represents Mekoros, sources, Lebas Kohen, Almona Ogrusha, Choseres Lutruma, Velo Lechazer Veshok. So now a word about Chazer Veshok. We're going to deal with the issue of a Bas Kohen who becomes a widow or divorced. She goes back to her father's house, as we said before, to resume eating Truma, but she does not resume the eating of the sacrificial portions that a Kohen receives from sacrifices. Even though before she was married as a daughter of a Kohen, she was entitled to eat the Chazer Veshok. Those are portions, the names of the portions from sacrifices that Kohanim receive. But in the case of a Bas Kohen, the daughter of a Kohen, who happened to have married a non-Kohen and then becomes an Almona, or a grusha, a widow, or a divorcee, she does not resume the eating of Chazer Veshok. Truma, yes, not Chazer Veshok. What is the source for that? So we will discover quite a few opinions as to what Pasuk serves as a source for that information. Tonu Rabbanan. We continue now in the Gemara. We have a Tanaic source, Kishi Choseres, Choseres Letruma V'eina, Choseres LeChazer Veshok. This, as Rashi says, is a reference to the pasuk that we read. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Ubas Kohen Kisia Amar Grusha V'Zera Ein Lo. That pasuk, when she goes back to her father's house, we say she goes back to eating truma, and we said actually not just a Bas Kohen, but the woman who happens to be a Bas Yisrael that had a son from a Kohen. So in our Rashi, there is a distinction, however, that's made between the Bas Kohen herself versus a woman who had a child from a Kohen. And what's very interesting to note is a point of contrast. It might be something that one wouldn't have thought of on their own, but we'll see later in the Gemara this point is emphasized, that a daughter of a Kohen, when she becomes, when she had married a czar, and then he died and she becomes a widow or is divorced, she goes back to eating truma and not chazav v'shok. However, a woman whose entire association with truma is in the merit of her son, that would be the case of a Bas Yisrael that happened to have a son from a Kohen, she is entitled to resume eating not only of Truma, but of Chazah V'Shok as well. So we'll come back to that later in the Gemara. Our Gemara continues, Omar Rav Chisda, Omar Ravina, Bar Shilo, my crop. What is the pasuk that indicates that a Bas Kohen, the daughter of a Kohen, when she becomes an Almona, or a grusha, after having been married to a non-Kohen, as she goes back to her father's house, she goes back to Truma and not to Chazav Ashok. The posuk they quote is, He betrumas hakodoshim lo sochel. This we saw already, Perek Chof Beis of Vayikra, posuk Yud Beis, and the posuk says, He betrumas hakodoshim lo sochel. What does that mean? Bemuram min hakodoshim lo sochel. Muram is that which is lifted up and separated from sacrifices that she does not eat. So, truma, yes, truma is the tithe taken from produce given to Kehanim, but not portions from sacrifices that are given as gifts to the Kehanim. That she does not eat. Rav Nachman Omar Rabo Bar Avua. The posuk says, Milechem. Milechem is a word that you find in posuk Yud Gimel, and Milechem, the mem, is emphasized here, velo kol lechem. Lechem is a word literally meaning bread, but it means the food, but the mem is a limitation letter. It's a prefix that limits, and that means only some of the food, velo kol lechem, not all of the food. Prat l'chazav v'shok. This is to the exclusion of the chazav v'shok portions of sacrifices that her father will receive, but she does not. As you can see, we have a bracketed section, and on the side of the Gemara, we indicate the following, the starred note. Matras ha-sograyim, the purpose of these brackets, lishma retzef atshuvos, or makoros, where we want to maintain a continuity of the sources or answers to the question of what is the source, laha de'ena chozeres l'chozav v'shok, regarding the Bas Kohen not going back to her father's house for the eating of chozav v'shok. So when you skip the bracketed section, you see Rav Safra in a triangle, number 3, following that Rav Papa, and then 2 lines after that, Rava. All giving sources for this idea that she doesn't resume eating chazav v'shok. Now, in the brackets, the Gemara raises a suggestion that when we say that she goes back to her father's house, but not fully back to her father's house, maybe it's coming to exclude something else. So, maskif, we continue now with the bracketed section. Maskif lo romi bar chamo. Emo, why not say, prat lahaforas nedorim. Prat means to the exclusion of, haforas nedorim is the voiding of vows. A father, when dealing with his daughter, a father has a right to annul the vows his daughter makes. What happens in the case of a woman that had left her father's house and then, after being widowed or divorced, goes back to the father's house? So the father does not resume the position of one who can annul her vows. Let's take a look at Rashi further down on the page in the narrow lines. V'emo prat la foras nedorim v'lo temo. And not say kihechi did the inyan truma hodra lemilsa kamaisa tehder nami inyan nedarim. Just in contrast to truma, let us say that yes, she goes back to truma, but not to haforas nedarim. So maybe that is what we are to learn from this. A Gemara responds, Omar Rava Kfar Poska Tana Debei Rabbi Yishmael. As far as the exclusion of a return to father's role in annulling vows, that is covered by another source. There's already a source for that. So that we, when we learn the psukim here that indicate a limitation to her return to Truma and not to something else, we don't need our psukim here to serve as the source for excluding Haforas Nadoram. That's taken care of in another place. And that other place is now what the Gemara shares. The Tono Debei Rabbi Shmuel. The following source was taught in the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel from Sefer Bamidbar Perek Lamed. The Neder Almona Ugrusha Yokum Oleha. The vows of a widow or the vows of a divorcee are to be fulfilled. Yokum Aleha literally means arise upon her, but if she vowed, she had better fulfill them. Ma Talmud Lomar, what do I need this pasuk for? Valo Mutsa Michlal Avu Mutsa Michlal Baal. An almona or a grusha, widow or a divorcee, she's not in her father's house, and she's not in a husband's house. So who would annul her vows anyway? So that the pasuk would be telling us the obvious when it says that the vows of a widow or a divorcee must be maintained, must be fulfilled. That's obvious. Ella hare shemosar av lishluchei habal o shemosu shluchei av lishluchei habal. Imagine the following case. A man has a daughter that he is giving over to another man in marriage. So a father gave his daughter over to emissaries sent by the husband to pick up his new wife. Or the agents of the father delivered the girl, the daughter, over to the agents of the husband. V'nis armelo o nisgarsho baderech. And en route, the husband either died or decided to divorce her. Heich ani korei ba. How should I refer to her? How should I describe her? Base avia shelzu o base bala shelzu. Is she still considered part of her father's house, since she hasn't completely left his house? She hasn't yet arrived in the new husband's domain yet? Or is she considered as part of her husband, the new husband's house? And as a result of that, if you say she is considered part of the new husband's house, so the father would not be able to annul her vows. And but we can look together at the Rashi in the lower part of the narrow lines. Base Ovia Shelzu, Hayo Volo Yotsuli Gamri, Vyochalo Avlo Affair. Should we say that since she's merely en route, so she hasn't really left her father's domain completely, and therefore the father could still annul her vows? Oh, Rashi goes on, oh, base Balo Shelzu, Varehi, Kishar Almona, Vieno Av Mefer. Or do we say that since she was en route to the husband and she was in the company of the husband's agents, so she's left her father, and therefore the father cannot annul her vows anymore. Lekach yotza mikro hazeh lo marloch. Therefore, this pasuk comes to inform us, kevan she yotza saw, since she left the father's domain even for a moment. And let's pick up the reading of the Gemara now. Elo lo marloch. This pasuk of neder al monagusha comes to tell me, kevan she yotza shol achas mirshuso av, since she left for an hour her father's domain, shuv eino yochol hafir, he can no longer annul her vows. It's a permanent loss of authority over her vows. So that when the Gemara at the beginning of the bracketed section suggested, as Rami Bar Chama suggested, maybe in the psukim dealing with what the woman goes back to when she goes back to her father's house after becoming an almona or grusha, she goes back to Truma but not to something else, that other thing is not a reference to Haforas Sadarim, because Haforas Sadarim is covered by this source, the Bamidbar Perek Lamed. Therefore, when we suggested above, she goes back to her father's house for eating truma, not for something else. That not for something else is a reference to the Choze Veshok, the sacrificial portions. That's what she does not go back to eating. We continue in the Gemara. Number three, Rav Safra Omar. Again, we're dealing with the issue of a Bas Kohen. When she becomes an Almon or a Grusha, she doesn't go back to eating Choze Veshok. Milechem Ovia Tochel. From Pasuk Yid Gimel, Rav Safra sees Lechem Velo Basar. She goes back to eating bread. Bread is representative of that which grows, produce, but not meat, not the sacrificial portions. Rav Papa Omar, Milechem Ovia Tochel, Lechem Hakonui Lovia. When the Pasuk says, from the bread of her father she eats, that was taken to mean bread that her father becomes the possessor of, the owner of. Prat L'chozev Ashok, to the exclusion of the sacrificial portions, to Mishuchon Govoa Kozochu. Now, literally, it means that he gains merit in eating the Chozev Ashok because he derives it from the heavenly table, which means the Kohen, when he eats Truma, he's eating something that is given to him as he now becomes the owner of it. It becomes his possession. Chozev Ashok, sacrificial portions, we don't say he becomes the owner of it, but rather he has a right to it. He's given a right to eat Chozev Ashok from the divine, lofty table, the altar, so to speak. So there's a difference between being considered the owner of something as opposed to someone that has rights to something. So that when the Pasuk says, Milechem Avia Tochel, according to Rav Papa, Lechem Avia means something, she gets the right to eat something from to eat that which her father is the owner of. Lechem HaKonui Lavia. Number five, V'rova Omar, V'es Chazei HaTnufa, V'es Shok Atruma, Tochlu B'mokom Tahor, Ata Uvanecha Uvanosecha Itoch. So this is a different pasuk, but from Vayikra Perek Yud Pasuk Yudalin, and what Rava sees in this pasuk, the pasuk of course is saying that the Chazei HaTnufa Shok HaTruma are the sacrificial portions. Don't be confused by the word HaTruma, because Truma means something that's lifted up and separated. In this case, we're talking about portions separated from the sacrifice that are given to a Kohen. And in the Pasuk says, the Kohen together with his sons and daughters eat it. Bizman she'itach. That means when she is with you. But once she marries, she's not with you, the father, anymore. And therefore, she does not continue, she doesn't resume eating that. Only when she is with you, meaning she starts off with you and hasn't left you yet. But once she leaves you, she doesn't go back to the Chozev Ashok portions of the sacrifice. Omar Rav Ado Bar Avo Tana Kishi Choseres Lebei Sovia. The source tells us that when she goes back to her father's house, Choseres LeTruma Veino Choseres LeChozev Ashok. A Bas Kohen, when she goes back for Truma and not for Chozev Ashok. Now this is in contrast to the other case, and we mentioned this before. Bishvil Bino Choseres Af L'Chozev Ashok. If a woman is bore a child from a Kohen, and through that child she has the merit of eating the portions given to Kehanim. So we're told in this source that a woman who is eating in the merit of her child, she has a right to eat even the Choze Veshok. Let's take a look at Rashi, the end of the narrow lines, Kishi Choseres, Bas Kohen. That's a reference to the Bas Kohen, the daughter of a Kohen, who becomes an Almona or a Grusha, and has no children. So she goes back, and we said to, for Truma, for the produce, tithe of produce, Avol Bas Yisrael, Choseres Lecho B'Truma B'Shvil B'Noh, a Bas Yisrael who married a Kohen had a child and the husband died, the Kohen died, and actually Rashi goes says she had a child from the Kohen, and then after her husband died, she married a Yisrael, and the Yisrael husband died during that interim period when she was married to the Yisrael, so she lost her Kohen identification. But when the Yisrael husband dies, Choseres af l'chozev v'shok, she goes back to eating even chozev v'shok. The gabi bas Kohen ksivi miuti. It's only in the context of the bas Kohen, the daughter of a Kohen, that we see limitation. We don't see limitation in the case of the bas Yisrael that had a child from a Kohen. And since we don't see a scriptural limitation, though it might appear to be paradoxical, but that's what we see from the verses. Let's continue in the Gemara. Also, Rav Mordechai Omra L'Shmaitzo Kamei Rav Ashi. Rav Mordechai said over this teaching to Rav Ashi, Omar Mehecha Ka Misrabya. From where do we learn the Bas Yisrael gets to eat Truma because of her son? Me Ubas. This was a reference to the Pasuk that we saw earlier, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Bas Kohen Kisya Almona Grusha. So from that extra word, we included not only a Bas Kohen, but a Bas Yisrael that had a child from a Kohen. She also, even if afterwards she married Yisrael and lost the Truma right, she, when the Yisrael husband dies, she goes back in the merit of her son. So that's the source for the Bas Yisrael eating Truma. So we ask the question, Mi Adifa Lo Mina? Can the rule of a Bas Yisrael who eats in the merit of her son be greater than the rules that apply to a Bas Kohen? The Bas Kohen herself, she does not go back to Chos of Ishok. So how is it that you're telling me that the Bas Yisrael who eats in the merit of her son does go back to eating Chos of Ishok? The Gemara answers, Hosom Ksivi Miuti. In the case of the Bas Kohen, you have limitation expressions. Hacha lo ksivi miuti. In the case of a woman who eats in the merit of her son, you don't have limitation expressions. We continue in the Gemara with a quote from the Mishnah, Bas Koyin Shenises Yisrael v'chulei, Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source, and we also have an introduction on the side under our topic heading, the Nosei. And we'll read that together. Bas Kohen Shomeres Yavam O Mu'uberes, the daughter of a Kohen whose husband died, leaving no children, but a surviving brother. So she is a Shomeres Yavam. She's waiting for the brother-in-law to marry her. Oy Mu'uberes, or she's a Bas Kohen that happens to be pregnant. O Shieshlo Vlad, or she has a child. So, of course, a Bas Kohen that has a child from a Yisrael. So, Lo Choseres. She doesn't go back to eating Truma from her father's house. Agamora Dona Bekach. Haim Be'emes Yesh Tzorech Leposuk Lemayit Muberes. The Gemara will be investigating, is it really necessary to cite a pasuk to exclude the pregnant, the Bas Kohen who's pregnant, or it's maybe we can prove that through Kal V'Chomer logic. We also have a structural note, the Mivneh, where a double underline is featured. These are hadgoshes. These are a simple means of emphasizing certain terms, lahokel alakriya, to make the reading simpler. So we have a way to focus on certain points, certain words, as we go through the logic. Now the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan. Vishova el beis aviha. This was in Vayikra Perichov beis posuk yud gimel. We saw this before. We read this posuk before. She goes back to her father's house for eating Truma. This, of course, was the Bas Kohen who had been married to a non-Kohen, and she became a widow or divorced. So we go. She goes back to her father's house. What's intended by this pasuk is prat l'shomer shofam, to the exclusion of a type of woman that doesn't really go back to her father's house because she's waiting for the yavam to marry her. So she's bound to the yavam, hence she's not described as someone who goes back to her father's house. Kinureha, also a word in the pasuk, prat l'muberes. This is a scriptural reference to the exclusion of a bas kohen who was pregnant with a child from the Yisrael. It's true her husband died, but she's left pregnant. She does not go back to eating truma. The Gemara now asks, the Brisa asks, v'halo din hu? Is it not so that through logic I could exclude the muberes from truma eating? Uma b'mokoyim. And what happens now, just by way of introduction, we're going to cite another case. We have the case of Yibum and the case of the Me'uberes. And we're going to create a Kal V'chomer, the result of which ought to be that the Me'uberes will certainly not go back to eating Truma. How do we construct the Kal V'chomer? So let's see how it's done in the text. Uma b'mokoyim shelo osa vlad min horishon, ki vlad min hasheni, lefotra min hayibom, yet osa ubar ki yalud. Now, for some of us, that might be considered a mouthful. So we're going to go over this carefully. The case of Yibum, where the source says lo osa vlad min horishon ki vlad min hasheni. So what does that mean? So you have a woman that was married to a particular husband, and they had a child. The husband died, and then the woman married a second husband. That second husband dies, leaving no children. What is the din regarding the woman and Yibum? Well, if that second husband died leaving no children, but he left a brother, she is not exempt from Yibum. Just because she happened to have a child with some other guy, some previous husband, that has nothing to do with her marriage to the second husband that died leaving no children. So she's not exempt by virtue of the fact that she happens to have a child from a previous husband. So that's what this line means. In the case of Yibum, where we do not view the Vlad from the Rishon, from the first husband, as if it were a child from the second husband. A child from the second husband would certainly have exempted her from Yibum, even though he might have left the husband that she was, the second husband that she had has a brother, but if she had a child from the second husband, that she would be exempt from Yibum. Obviously, Yibum is only for a case where the man dies leaving no children. But as far as the laws of Yibum are concerned, the fact that she has a child from the first husband, that's not like a child from the second husband to exempt her from Yibum. So that you see that in the realm of Yibum, there's a certain limitation in how far we go with exemptions. And yet, Asa Ubar Kiyolud, in the case of Yibum, a woman who is whose husband died, but she's pregnant, she is exempt from Yibum. So that Yibum represents a realm where exemption is not so forthcoming. But when it comes to a pregnancy, that does create exemption. Makaim she'asa vlad min harishon kevlad min hasheni lepoisla min hatruma. In the realm of truma, where the child from a first husband, imagine a bas kohen that was married to Yisrael, and she had a child, and the husband Yisrael died, and then she married someone else, and that second fellow died without children. This Bas Kohen, because she has a child from the first husband, from the Israel, she is still restricted from Truma eating. So that in the realm of Truma, the Vlad from the first husband does have influence over her. So that the realm of Truma, we see there is more influence than in the case of Yibum with regard to the Vlad from the first husband, where it prevents her from eating Truma. So Eino Din Shinase Ubar Kiyalud, all the more so in the realm of Truma, the pregnancy will have an influence. So that if we want to restate this Kal Vachomer in somewhat superficial, general terms, we would say, in the case of Yibum, where there is no influence of Vlad from the previous husband, as opposed to a Vlad from the second husband, and yet pregnancy does influence, in the realm of Truma, where the child from the first husband is very influential, as if it were a child from the second husband, to disqualify her from Truma, all the more so pregnancy should be able to have influence. The Gemara says, lo, I don't accept that Kal Vachomer. Ma li asa ubar kiyolud le'inyan yebom. In the case of yebom, dafka, specifically there, the pregnancy will have an effect. Sherei asa mesim kechayim. In the realm of yebom, there's another halacha where the husband died and then a woman was married and had a child, where the husband died, and then afterwards the child dies. In the realm of Yibum, the dead is like the living. The fact that the son died after the father died, it's tantamount to the son remaining alive, and that exempts her from Yibum. So, in the realm of Yibum, I can see more reason for the influence of the Ubar in the direction of exemption, because there's additional precedent for exemption in the form of what we just read, Asa Mesim Kechayim. The dead are as if they're alive. The dead son is as if he's still alive, exempting the mother from Yibum. Nase Ubar Kiyalid and Truma, should we say the same thing in the case of Truma, that pregnancy should have an effect? Shalom Asa Mesim Kechayim. In the realm of Truma, when the child dies, we don't view him as if he is still alive. And to make it a little more practical, we go look at Rashi's second line from the bottom. Linyan Truma Shalosa Mesim Kechayim Bas Kohen Sheolim Yisrael Umes Bailov Yacharkach Beno, where the daughter of a Kohen who had married a Tzar and the husband died, and then the child that they had died, she goes back. She goes back to her father's house. She's not excluded from Truma. So you see, in the realm of Truma, we don't view the dead son as if he is still alive. So with that having been said, I can't make the Kal Vachomer before that we tried to do, and through which we would then say that the Muberes, the pregnancy by Truma, would prevent her from going back to her father's house. Talmud Lomar, therefore I need the Pasuk to conclude thusly. Kinurea, Prat Muberes. Only through the Pasuk will I exclude the Muberes, the Bas Kohen who's pregnant from the Israel, I'll exclude her from going back to her father's house. She's a Bas Kohen and eating the Truma. The Gemara now goes on to make a point. Before we read the Gemara text, let's say an overview. We just finished a Tanaic source which featured Dinim Halachas of Yibum and Halachas of Truma. There was an attempt made to make a Kal Vachomer concerning the the status of a Mu'uberes and her being disqualified from resuming Truma eating. The logic featured in the Kal V'Chomer was rejected, and hence we have to resort to the pasuk. On Omid Beis, you'll notice there's a simen, three lines from the top, but there's a, that simen, it's a type of mnemonic device to remember, to be able to remember the upcoming Gemara. But several lines after that, you can see if you count five lines from the top, there is a section of Gemara that will continue to the end of the perek, where alternative suggestions appear, suggestions that through Kal V'Chomer logic, maybe I should come to conclusions other than that which we have established, or other than that which we thought till now. And at each point, after the Kal V'Chomer is raised, the Gemara will show that through psukim you cannot conclude whatever you are attempting to conclude. This will be a very definitive, structured Gemara. A Gemara with a very definitive structure to it, four alternative suggestions, but each one is rejected by citations where we have diamonds, as you can see on Omid Beis, where Talmud Lomar is featured in the diamond, where the Pasuk comes to refute or undo what is suggested in the Kal V'Chomer. I sometimes refer to that type of Gemara as a type of intellectual acrobatics, where we try to activate logic to conclude something that is other than that which is accepted. And then, of course, you'll ask, well, if logic would lead you to that alternative, how do we know that what we understand to be accepted as being true? So at each point, at each juncture, the Gemara will say, we know what we know through psukim. But before we get to that section of Gemara, the Gemara has a long point. And let's continue in the Gemara. V'itzrich l'michtav kinureu l'mutei muberes, v'itzrich l'michtav v'zera einlo l'mutei valad. We have two scenarios, two cases of a Bas Kohen. We featured these in our introductory remarks under the Nosei heading before, of a daughter of a Kohen that will be disqualified or excluded from going back to her father's house, either because she is pregnant from a Yisrael or because she has a child from the Yisrael. And I need to spell out both of these exemptions. One is through the word kinureha, a word from the pasuk, and the other is the pasuk that says vizera ein law, where she has no children, so we say she goes back to eating from her father's house, to the exclusion of a woman that has a child from the Israel. So the Gemara reads, v'itzrich lemichtav kinureha limutei muberes, the itzrich lemichtav v'zera ein law limutei vad. We read that already. Okay, so we continue. De'i kosav. What we have to do is show why is each type of exemption needed to be spelled out, and as opposed to just spelling out one exemption or one disqualification, and let me figure out the other from that. So let's see why that could not be done. The e kosav rachmona v'zera ein law. Had the Torah described a woman that had no children, she goes back, as opposed to a woman that has a child from the Israel, she does not go back. I'll tell you, there I understand she doesn't go back. Me'ikara chad gufa v'ashto tre gufi. Originally, when she was with her father, she was an individual, she was one person, chad gufa, one person. And now, there are two. There's the woman and the child that she has from the Israel. So that's a big change. So she can't go back to eating chumavo. Mu'beres, the case of a Bas Kohen who was impregnated by Israel, the Meikora Chad Gufa, originally she was an individual, was one person. V'ashto Chad Gufa, she's still one person. Granted, she has she's carrying a pregnancy, but she's still one person. Emo Techol, I would have thought that when the Yisrael husband dies, leaving her pregnant, she goes back to her father's house to eat truma. Tzricha. Therefore, I need the pasuk to memaye, to exclude the meuberes. Something I would not have been able to derive from the other halacha, the halacha of a bas kohen with a child that does not resume eating truma. The ikos avrachmona meuberes, had the Torah written the case of the muberes as being disqualified from resuming truma eating, well, that is easily understood. The meikara gufa srika, originally she is when she was in her father's house, she was a gufa srika, she was an empty body, and srika means empty, she was not pregnant. We're at the top of Omid Beis. Vahashta gufa malio. Now she has a different kind of body. She's full. She's carrying a pregnancy. So there's a major change in the lady herself. Avol zera ein lo. But regarding the issue of a woman that through the pasuk of zera ein lo, we said if she has a child, so she does not resume. The Bas Kohen who has a child from the Yisrael does not resume truma eating. De mekora gufa srika, the hashta gufa srika. That case, she originally, when she was by her father, she was an empty body, and now it's true she bore a child, but she's empty herself right now. There hasn't been any change. There is no change in her, as she is now from the point that she was originally. She was originally gufa srika, and now too she's gufa srika. Amolo, I would have thought that she is not that she's not disqualified from eating the truma of her father. Sricha, therefore I need to memayate that case as well, where I need the pasuk to memayate the case of Yesh Lo Vlad. As you can see, we have what we referred to before, Simon Omar le lo nase maseo b'miso nase lo nase b'vlad yovam utruma ibum utruma simon. This is we'll call it a mnemonic or a memory device in order to be able to recount that which we are going to see later in the Gemara. Before we go through the Gemara, I know that we introduced this before, but let's do it again through that which we've written on the side under the Nosei, Mivneh heading. The Nosei is the structural note, the topic heading, Mivneh the structural note. This comment deals with both topic and structure. The Gemara represents, these are Nisyonos, Lishanois Hamaskonos Dili'el, attempts to change the conclusions that we had reached before, or we'll say the ideas that we had stated before, ayidei yitziras kal v'chumrois, through the creation of kal v'chumra logic, shebehemshech idachu ayidei the psukim that are featured in diamonds. The Talmud Lomar expression, which introduces the pasuk, is highlighted with a diamond. So each double underline will introduce a suggestion, and when the diamond appears, you realize that that suggestion is being rejected. Omar le Rav Yehuda mi de askarta l'rova. Suggestion: lo naase mesim kechayim le'inyan yibum mikal v'chomer. Let us not view the dead as if they are alive regarding evil. So we have to just restate or review what we said before, and now, and then suggest that at this point we want to say other than that which we said. A woman who was married and had a child, the husband died, and then the son died, the child died. We say that a woman like that does not do Yibum. Simply, when the husband died, he's a man that died leaving a child. The fact that the child died later that's of no relevance regarding her exemption from Yibum. The way we had stated that before is the dead are as if they're alive. And what do we mean by that? The child that died after his father, it's as if the child remains alive with respect to the mother's exemption from Yibum. So whether the son is alive or even if it is dead, assuming of course that he died after his father, the mother is exempt from Yibum. And what's the Gemara trying to do now? To say, no, let's not say that. And that is in these words, which we'll read again, lo nasa mesim, let us not consider the dead, namely that son that had died, kichayim, as if he's still alive, regarding Yibum. And now, the result of this suggestion would be that a woman that had been married, had a child, the husband died, and then the son died, she'll now have to do Yibum. That would be the result. And why should we say that? Through Kal v'chomer logic. Uma b'mokoyim she'osa vlad min horishon, kivlad min hasheni, lepoislo min hatruma. Yet, lo osa meisim kechayim, in the realm of truma, we say that we had a case before of a Bas Kohen that married a Yisrael, and she had a son from the Yisrael. When the husband dies, and she marries a second husband, and has no children, nevertheless, the child that she had from the first husband prevents her from going back to Truma eating. So in the realm of Truma, we describe it as a situation where the Vlad Min HaRishon is like a Vlad Min HaSheni to disqualify her from eating Truma, to disqualify the Bas Kohen from going back to her father's house. And yet, lo osa meisim kechayim, in the case of Truma, if she had a son from a Yisrael, if the Bas Kohen had a son from the Yisrael, and that son died, we don't say it's as if he's still alive. We don't say it's as if the Bas Kohen still has a son from Israel and doesn't eat Truma. That's not true. We know that if the son dies, if the son the Bas Kohen had from Israel, she goes back to her father's house. And that's what we mean here. Lo osa meisim kechayim. So we, up till now, we've stated the case of Truma, where we say that the Vlad Min HaRishon, in the case of Truma, is like a Vlad Min HaSheni, which that disqualifies her from Truma. But yet, we don't say that Meisim Kechayim. Mokaim, in the case of Yibum, Shelo Asa Vlad Min HaRishon Kevlad Min HaSheni Lefotra Min HaYibum. In the realm of Yibum, the fact that she had a child from a first husband, it's not as if she has a child from the second husband to exempt her from Yibum, but rather she is obligated to Yibum. Eino din shelo naase meisim kechayim. All the more so, in the case of Yibum, we should not view the dead as if they are alive. And if the child died after her husband, she should be obligated to do Yibum. So why don't we say that? So once again, through logic, using Truma as your starting point, you would end off that in a case of Yibum, if a woman was married and the husband died, and then the child that they had died, she would be expected to do Yibum. Why don't we say that? Talmud Lomar, Durocheha Darche Noyam V'chol Nesivoseha Shalom. Here, the pasuk means the ways of Torah and mitzvahs, they are pleasant ways, and all its paths are paths of peace. And as a result of that the Torah represents paths of peace and pleasantness, the suggestion is rejected. What was the suggestion? That if a woman had been married and had a child, the husband died, and then the child died, the suggestion was she should be expected to do Yibum. Yibum or Chalitza. But Rachel D'Archinon precludes that. So if we look at Rashi's second line from the top, Rachel D'Archinon, Vizu Shoyolo Ben, the woman whose husband died, but he left a child, Velo Nizkika Liyavam, and at that point when the husband died and she still had a son, the child from that husband remained alive, she wasn't Yavam bound. Venisei Slashuk. And then, well, she wasn't Yavam bound, so she married some outsider. Umeis Bino. And after she married the outsider, the child from the first husband died. Im Toimar Tachloitz, if you're going to expect this woman who is now married to a new husband, if you're going to say that as a result of the child from her previous husband dying makes her obligated in the mitzvahs of Yibum, so okay, she's not going to marry the brother-in-law, but she's going to have to participate in a shoe removal ceremony. Harehi Mizganal Baila. By having a married woman going to some previous brother-in-law and having to remove his shoe and going through the spitting ceremony, if you were to watch your wife doing that, what would you feel? So Chazal understand this, harehi misgana baila, that lowers her esteem or her pleasantness in the eyes of her husband, of her new current husband. Hilkoch al korchoch, since the Torah couldn't possibly set up a woman to be in such a position where she'll become misgane al bailosh, her esteem will be lowered in the eyes of her husband. Hilkoch al korchoch ben ein lo, when the pasuk says regarding the mitzvah of Yibum, ben ein lo, a man who dies leaving no children, b'shas miso ka'omar, vare yeshlo. The mitzvah of Yibum is only applicable to a man that dies, and at the time of death he had no children. Only then do we say the widow is obligated to do Yibum. But a man who died, and at the time of death he left a child, there is no mitzvah of Yibum to begin with. And just to repeat ourselves, the reason for that is that otherwise you're going to be setting up a woman for a situation that would lead to unpleasantness in the eyes of her husband, as we described. The Gemara now, suggestion number two. Why not say the following? And here is a truma-related suggestion. V'nase mesim kechayim le'inyin truma. Mikal v'chomer. What would the result of this suggestion be? Let us view that which is dead as if he is alive regarding truma. That if a bas kohen had a child from a Yisrael, even though the child from the Yisrael died, we're suggesting now that she should not be able to go back to eating truma from her father's house as a bas kohen. And let us make this suggestion, which of course is counter to that which we were assuming earlier. So let us make this suggestion based on a Kal V'Chomer. Let us conclude this based on Kal V'Chomer logic. And again, the conclusion, this conclusion would be that a bas kohen that happened to have a son from Israel, even if the child died, that she should be disqualified from Truma through Kal V'Chomer. Uma b'mokoim sheloi osa vlad min orishon kevlad min asheni lefotro min ayibom. And yet, also Mason Kechayim, mind you, in under circumstances in the topic of Yibum, where the child from a previous husband is not viewed as the child from a second husband to exempt her from Yibum. Rather, if the woman that happened to have a child from her first husband remarried a man that died leaving no children, she's not exempt from Yibum. Rather, she is obligated, as if the child is not there. The child from the first husband is of no relevance. And yet, in the realm of Yibum, we say that the dead are like the living. That's the case where the father died, and then the son died. It's as if the son is still alive, and the mother is exempt from Yibum. So, in the realm of Yibum, you can say that it's presented as a realm where exemption is not easily achieved, but there is some area of exemption in the sense of where we say also mesim kechayim. That's in the realm of Yibum. In the realm of Truma, Malkoim she also Vlad min Arishon kevlad min Asheni leposlo min Truma. There, the Vlad from the Rishon has influence on her as if it's a Vlad min Asheni, which we know disqualifies the Bas Kohen from Truma. So in a realm where Vlad min Arishon does have influence, Eino din shenase meisim kechayim, so all the more so we should be able to view the dead as if they are alive. And if she once had a child from a Yisrael, even if the child died, she should not be able to go back eating truma. And we know she does. Talmud Lomar, so how do we know she does? How do we know that a Bas Kohen that had a child from a Yisrael, but once the child dies, she goes back to eating truma? Talmud Lomar, v'zera ein law. The Pasuk described the Bas Kohen going back to truma if she has no children. V'ha ein law. Well, right now she has no children. The child that she had from the Israel died. A new suggestion. Finase Vlad min Arishon ke Vlad min Asheni linyan Yibum mikal v'chomer. Here, what's the suggestion, which of course is counter to that which we said before. Let us say that a woman that was married to man number one, and she had a child from man number one. She then marries man number two, dies without children. But since she has a child from man number one, let us say that she would be exempt from Yibum through Kal V'chomer logic. So our conclusion, we want to conclude something about Yibum. What's the starting off point? We're going to start off with Truma. Uma b'mokoim shelo also meisim kechayim linyan Truma. Mind you, in a realm where, like Truma, where we don't view the dead as if they are alive. Namely, if a Bas Kohen was married to Yisrael and had a son, but the son died, we don't view the dead son as if he's alive to disqualify her from Truma, but she's entitled to Truma. So you have the Truma is presented as a realm where the disqualification is not so easily achieved, and yet also Vlad min Arishon ke Vlad min Asheni. Yet with regard to a child that she had from a first husband, a Bas Kohen that married a Yisrael and had a child from him, and the husband died and she married a second man leaving no children, but the fact that she has a child from the first husband disqualifies her. So the realm of Truma, where we say it's not so easy to disqualify her, and yet when it comes to the Vlad min Arishon is like Vlad min Asheni, in the realm of Yibum, where we do view the dead as if they are alive to exempt her from Yibum. In other words, the dead being like alive do have an influence in the realm of Yibum. Eino din. And by the way, what do we mean by the also meisim kechayim? As we said already a few times, if a woman had been married to a man and they had a child and the man died and then the son child died, the child is meis, but he is viewed as if he's still alive, insofar as exempting the mother from Yibum. So in the realm of Yibum, where we do allow meisim to be viewed as chayim, Eino din shenase Vlad min Arishon ke Vlad min Asheni, all the more so in this realm of Yibum, we should view the child that she has from that first husband as being influential in exempting her from Yibum with the brother of the second husband. And yet we don't say that. We don't say that since she had a child from the first husband, that will exempt her from Yibum upon the death of her second husband who left no children. So how do we know that? Talmud Lomar Uven Ein Lo. When a man dies leaving no children, there is a mitzvah of Yibum. V'ha Ein Lo. This second husband died leaving no children. Another suggestion. V'loi nase Vlad min orishon kevlad min asheni l'truma. In the realm of Truma, let us not view the child from the first husband as if it's a child from the second husband regarding Truma. And the result of this suggestion would be a Bas Kohen, even if she happens to have a child from a Yisrael, but from the that was from her first husband, she married a second husband that left no children, let her go back to eating Truma. And let us say this through Kal V'chomer logic. So you'd have an amazing situation. I say amazing in light of what we take for granted, but here we're going to challenge that through Kal V'chomer logic. We're going to have a situation of a Bas Kohen that happened to have a child from a Yisrael, and yet the mother will go back to eating Truma. Why? Because the second husband that she had married died, leaving no children. So, in the words of the Gemara, let us not view the Vlad Min HaRishon as if it were the Vlad Min HaSheni regarding Truma through Kal V'chomer. And how does this Kal V'chomer work? So here we're going to use Yibum as our starting point. Uma b'mokoim she'osa mesim kechayim lefotra min ha'yibum. Mind you, in the realm of Yibum, where we view the dead as if they're alive to exempt her from Yibum, and yet lo asa vlad min orishon ke vlad min asheni, with regard to Yibum exemption, we don't look at the vlad of the first husband as capable of exempting her as if it were a child from the second husband, and she is obligated in Yibum. Mokaim, in the realm of Truma, shelo asa meisim kechayim linyan Truma. In the case of Truma, we don't view the dead as if they are alive. That, namely, if the child that she happened to have from Israel dies, we don't view him as if it's still alive to prevent her from Truma, but rather she goes back to eating Truma. Eino din, so all the more so. Coming off of the case of Yibum, all the more so. Eino din shelo naase vlad min orishon kevlad min asheni. Let us not view the child from the first husband as if it's a child from the second husband. And if I'm not going to view the child from the first husband as if it's from the second husband, we'll have a situation of a Bas Kohen that happens to have a child from a Yisrael, that was her first husband, going back to eating Truma. Talmud Lomar Ein Law. The pasuk that sanctions a Bas Kohen going back to eating Truma is provided she doesn't have any children from a Zar. V'ha Yeshla, but in this case she happens to have a child from the first husband, and that's enough to disqualify her from returning to eating Truma. As you can see, this brings us to the end of the ninth perek, and now we begin the tenth perek of Yevamos, which is known as Ho'isha Rabo. On the side of the Gemara we have a topic heading, the Nosei Isha Shaholach Bailo L'Medina Sayam, a woman whose husband went abroad. V'omru lo meis balech, and she was told, you know, your husband died. Well, a woman whose husband died is now free to marry someone else. V'holcha v'niseis li'achir. She goes and marries someone else. V'chozer arishon, and lo and behold, the first husband comes back. What are we to do in such a situation? The Mishnah. Ho'isha shoholach bailum nesayam. Uvo v'yomru lo meis balech. A woman whose husband went abroad, and she was told that your husband died. V'niseis, she married someone else. V'achach bo bailum. And then the first husband comes back. Turns out she was essentially a married woman that married a second fellow, which is totally forbidden. What do we do? What do we say? Teitzei mizeh umizeh utzricha get mizeh umizeh. First of all, she has to leave. She is not entitled to remain with the second husband. That's for sure not. She was never married to him. She was really married all along to the first guy. But she must leave the first guy also. And not only that, but she needs a divorce document from each one, from both of these men. V'ein lo ksuba v'lo peros v'lo mazonos v'lo blos, and she loses all of her ksuba rights. These are terms that we've spent quite a bit of time in recent shiurim explaining, so I hope that we don't have to dwell on these terms right now. But they basically all refer to rights that a regular woman, upon being widowed or divorced, is entitled to. In this case, it's true she's going to be divorced, but she's not going to get her ksuba, nor peros, nor mazonos, nor blos. Lo alzeh, v'lo alzeh. Not from either one of these men. V'im notla mizeh umizeh tachzir. And if she collects these payments from both of them, from either one, she must return it to them. Vavlad mamzer mizeh umizeh. And children that she has are considered illegitimate. Well, children from the second man are certainly going to be illegitimate, because her relation to that second man was as a married woman, as is evidenced by the fact that her original husband comes back. So the children from the second husband are considered a mamzer gomor, a complete mamzer. The children that she would have from the first fellow would also be considered mamzerim. We're talking about a case where he takes her back, when the first husband continues living with her and bears children with her. So we're going to say that those are mamzerim midrabanan, rabbinically classified as mamzerim. The Mishnah goes on with another halacha, v'lozev ezem etamala. If the husbands in this case are kohanim, in contrast to kohanim under regular circumstances, that even though they don't expose themselves to death, defilement through the dead, in the case of the seven close relatives, including which is one's wife, their Kohen does defile himself to her in burying her and participating in the funeral, if you will. Not so in the case of these husbands, even though they may be Kohanim, or I should say, if they are Kohanim, they are not entitled to defile themselves. V'lo ze v'ze zakoyim, neither one of them are eligible. Lo b'mitziyosa, v'lo b'maisiyodeo, v'lo b'afaras nidoreo. They are not entitled to own items she finds, nor are they entitled to her work production, any income she produces, nor do either one of these men have the rights that a normal husband would have in annulling her vows. Hoy sabas Yisrael nifsalo min akuna. If the woman in question that ended up marrying a second husband while her first husband turned out to be alive, she becomes through the intimacy that she has with this new husband, with the second husband, she becomes disqualified from the kuna, because she's now classified as a zona, a woman who experienced intimacy that's generally speaking punishable by kores, would result in the woman becoming classified as a zona. Ubas levi min amaiser. If you're dealing with a bas levi, she would be disqualified from eating maisris. Maiser rishon is the tithe given to the levium. This woman, she's going to be divorced from both of these men, but she does not resume in eating miser in the confines of her father's house. That is a rabbinic imposition, ruling. And ubas kayen minatruma. If the woman in this scenario was a bas kohen, though she's divorced, in a standard case of a bas kohen is divorced, is entitled to eat truma. Not so here. The ain yorshim shel zev, yorshim shel zev, yorshim es ksubasa. The heirs of either one of the husbands will not be entitled to inherit her ksuba. Vim mesu, if the husbands featured above die, achiv shel zeh, the achiv shel zeh, cholzin v'lo miyavnen. The brothers from each one of these husbands, respectively, do chalitza, but do not do yibum with her. Rabbi Yossi omer ksubasa al nichse baylo harishon. Rabbi Yossi says that she does get a ksuba from the estate, from the properties of her first husband. Rabbi Elazar omer harishon zakai v'siyasa v'maisi yodeo foras nedereo. The first husband, the fellow that originally went abroad, he is entitled to items she finds or income that she produces, and also has the rights to annul her vows. Rabbi Shimon Oimer, Biosa, Oi Chalitzosa, Me Ochiv Shel Rishon, Poteres Sorosa, Vien, Havlag, Mimenu, Mamzer. Rabbi Shimon disagrees with the information we saw in the Reisha, in which we saw Velo Miabnim. Rabbi Shimon disagrees and says that there is Yibum with the surviving brother of the first husband. V'im nise shelo birshus muteres lachzor lo. This expression, im nise shelo birshus, is explained by Rashi. Nise shelo birshus, Rashi says, based in. Shebo shnei edim v'omru meis balech v'nise smei atzmo. Two witnesses came and told her that the husband died, and she married a new fellow on her own. She didn't marry because Beis Din instructed her that you can marry a second man. She was working with the benefit, we'll say, of two witnesses that testified her husband was dead. So that's what's referred to here. Nisei Shelo Birshus Beis Din. If she married under those circumstances where two witnesses had come telling her that her husband was dead, Muteres Lafsulo, she can go back to her first husband. Even though in the interim the first husband, he showed up indicating that she should never have married the second man, but her marriage was based on information given by two witnesses. She relied on the two witnesses, and hence her marriage to the second man is considered an oines, is considered something beyond her control, and a woman who's an anusa is allowed to go back to her husband. The Mishnah continues, Niseis alpi beisdin teitze ufturu min hakorban, lo niseis alpi beisdin teitze v'chayeves b'korban. The case of a woman who's nisis alpi based in, this is a situation, and we'll see more about this in the Gemara, a woman who needs a hefter of basin. What do we mean by that? One thing is for sure, two witnesses didn't tell her that her husband died, but one witness told her that the husband died. In Jewish law, little premium is placed on the testimony of one witness. The pasuk says, alpi shnayim edim o shlosh edim yokum davar, that you need a minimum of two witnesses to testify in order to have the strength of testimony. If, however, a woman relied on the word of a singular witness and based and told her, look, the one witness said that your husband is dead, check out matters, and if you find what he said to be true is true, then go and marry someone else. That's called Nisei Salpi Basin. And then, of course, the husband shows up. We say, Uftura Min HaKorban. She is exempt from bringing a sacrifice that is ordinarily brought by people who mistakenly violated Chiyuv Eikares. Here, she's exempt. Why? Because this is called a Yachid She'osa Beruas Basin. This is an individual who functioned based on a ruling of the court. However, if you have a woman that wasn't functioning based on the ruling of the court, but rather on the testimony of two witnesses, and on her own she married someone else, and then the husband, original husband, shows up. We say she is chayeves b'korban. She's obligated to bring a sacrifice, which is characteristic of people that violate severe offenses in an unwitting fashion. Yofe koyach beizdin she potra min hakorban. We see from this this halacha that there is strength to the court, that it is capable, the fact that a person relies on a court ruling, that and things go awry later, but she nevertheless is exempted from the sacrifice. Harua beizdin linase v'holcha v'kilkala chayeves b'korban. A woman who received a court ruling that she's allowed to marry someone else, and she didn't use the court's ruling for the purpose of marrying someone else, but she was involved with some type of harlotry. That's kilkula. She messed up, and then it turns out that her husband was still alive. Chayeves b'korban. She's obligated to bring a sacrifice. Now, and why is that? Shelohu tiru elulinose. The court simply granted her permission to marry someone else. The court didn't say, well, now since your husband is supposedly dead, you can go and fool around. So her promiscuous behavior was not a function of her relying on the court ruling. Therefore, she doesn't enjoy the exemption of bringing a sacrifice. Continuing now in the Gemara, midekatani seifa nisei shelo birshus muteres lachzolo. A woman whose husband had gone abroad, the Mishnah said that if she married shelo birshus, she can go back to her original husband. What does that mean? She got married shelo birshus and allowed to go back to her original husband. Shelo birshus beisdin elo be'edim. So that what that phrase means when it says she married a second fellow shelo birshus, it means she didn't marry based on the permission granted to her by beisdin, but rather on the basis of the fact that two witnesses testified that her husband was dead. Michlal dereisha birshus beisdin ube'ed echad. So the reisha, which spoke about her getting married birshus beisdin, of course, under those circumstances, we say there she's not allowed to go back to the first husband. When does the Mishnah say she's allowed to go back? That's when she married shelo birshus beisdin, but with the reliance upon two witnesses. So the Reisha was speaking about a case where beisdin had given her permission, and it was based on the testimony of one witness. Almo eirecho ne'emon. So from here you see that one witness has believability, at least to the extent that you have a married woman going to marry a second husband. Well, what was that based on? So we're assuming right now it's based on the fact that you had one witness that reported that the first husband was dead. So we see from here that one witness has believability. Utna nami. You'll notice we have triangles that highlight three cases where one witness has believability. We have this idea in the following: Huchsuku lios masien aid mipi aid, v'isha mipi isha, mipi eved umipi shivcha. From this source too, you see that we believe aid mipi aid means testimony that wasn't seen firsthand, but a one hearsay, or should say maybe you heard from so-and-so the information, or a woman hearing from another woman. All of these are examples of, we'll say, a weak form of testimony, and yet we rely on their word to enable a woman who we knew was previously married, when the information states that the husband died, she can marry a new husband, she can remarry based on that information. So we see from here, Almo Eid Echod Nehemon. From here too, we see this idea of a singular witness being believed. Utnan Nami, we have another source also. Eid Echod Oimer Ochalta Chelev. One witness comes to a fellow and says, you know, you ate forbidden meat. Chelev are parts of the animal that is forbidden for one to eat. And if one does eat it, so inadvertently, in Bishogeg, a person would be obligated to bring a sin offering. If one deliberately ate chelev, so he's chayev kores. So one witness says, you ate chelev. Who, Omer, and the subject himself denies. He says, lo achalti, I didn't eat. I didn't eat chelev. Potter, he is exempt. He is exempt from bringing the sin offering. Taimo diomar lo achalti. The reason that he is exempt is ostensibly because he countered the witness. He denied it. Ha ishtik mehemon. Had he not countered the witness but remained silent, that one witness would have been believed. Almo eid echod mehemon. One witness is believed, and the result would be the bringing of a sacrifice, a sin offering, into the Beis Hamikdash, and the Kohanim who process it will eat from it. That shows, and we don't say that this is there is a prohibition or a violation or a suffake of chulin ba'azora, of the mundane being brought into the temple. No, we would be viewing that as a totally kosher, acceptable sacrifice. The Gemara asks, midoraisa menolan. So from where do we know that, from the Torah, where do we know that one witness is believed? On the side of the Gemara, under the Nosei Mivneh heading, you see a house featured, house shape, and we have written, Mahu HaMokor LeNe'emonus De'eid Echon. What is the source for the believability that we are granting or assigning to one witness? And as we mentioned earlier, after all, we, from the Torah's perspective, and something that appears very often in Halacha, that you need to have two witnesses to testify in order for us to rely, believe, and act upon whatever matter it is. Where do we have a source for one witness being believed? The Gemara answers, Desanya, Ahoida Elov Chatoso. The Pasuk describes someone who sinned, and it became known to him that he had sinned. He has to bring a sacrifice. So from this Pasuk we say, Ohoida ilov chataso velo shiyodiuhu achirim. And here we'll just translate. The Gemara will clarify this source as the Gemara unfolds. But and not a situation where others tell him. Yochol afapi she'eno machisho ye poter. We're saying that a person brings an offering, a korban, when it became known to him and not that others told him. Is this exemption applicable when he doesn't counter what they are saying? Talmud lomar oyhoida elov mikomakom. The Pasuk says that he, however it becomes known to him, he does bring a sacrifice. Hechi domi, what are the circumstances that would lead to his being obligated to bring a sacrifice? Ilema de osu tre velo komakrish lehu. If it were a case where two witnesses come and say that you ate chelev, as an example of a sin that requires this kind of korban. So if you're saying that the pasuk is addressing a case where two witnesses come and the subject remains silent, kralomali, what do I need this pasuk for? That's well known that two witnesses that testify that they are believed. Elo lav chad. Rather, this pasuk is talking about a case where there was only one witness. V'chilo ka machish le behemon. And from the source we just read, we see that if one witness was informing him of the sin and the subject remained silent, the one witness is believed. Shma mino eid echad ne'emon. So we see from here that one witness has believability. This, by the way, is in stark contrast to the power of two witnesses. If two witnesses testify, so then the subject, the thinking right now is the subject would have no legs on which to stand in contradicting them. When it comes to one witness, though, he has strength, he has believability, when there is no contradiction of what he says. The Gemara now asks, Umimai de mishum de mehemon? Who is to say that the bringing of the sacrifice is because of the believability of one witness? Domo mishum de koshosik ushtika koido damyo. Maybe the whole reason for his bringing the sacrifice is because he simply remained silent to the testimony of the singular witnesses, of the singular witness, and silence is considered agreement or admission, so that it's a function of your own admission of having done the sin. That's why you have to bring the sacrifice. So that the emphasis now is not on the fact that one, not on the idea that one witness is believed, but rather it's because you brought it on yourself, so to speak, by your admitting through your silence. Teida dekotoni seifa. And to prove this, we say, continue reading the continuation, the end of that source. Omru shnayim, ochalta chelev, v'omer lo ochalti. Two witnesses say, you ate chelev, and he counters them. Potter. Rabbi Meir, Machayev. We introduced this idea just before when we were really reflecting Rabbi Meir's point of view, that you cannot contradict the testimony of two witnesses. Omar, Rabbi Meir, kal v'chomer. Rabbi Meir argues against the Tanakhama, says that through kal v'chomer logic, I can show you that two witnesses can mechayev him, even in the face of his denial. Uma im heviuhu shnaim lidei miso chamura, lo yeviu lidei korban akal. Two witnesses can bring a person to suffer a death penalty. Regardless of what the subject is saying, he can be denying from today till tomorrow, but they can bring him to a death penalty. So certainly they should be able to bring him to a sacrifice obligation, which is hakka, which is a lesser degree of obligation than to suffer a death penalty. Omru lo. So the Rabbonon, who said that an individual can counter even two witnesses and end up not having to bring the sacrifice, why are we going to believe him, the subject, when he says lo achalti? Omrulos of the Rabbanan explain, ma im yirtze lomar meizid hoyisi. If you have doubts as to this person's intentions when he said lo achalti, if you think that he is simply trying to avoid bringing a sacrifice, if that's his whole agenda, he could have simply said, upon being charged with having eaten chelev, he says, yeah, I agree with you, I ate chelev, but I did so willingly. That would be enough reason or enough basis of exempting him from a sacrifice. Why does the fellow have to say, if his whole agenda is to become exempt from a sacrifice, he doesn't have to counter them? So what must be that when he says lo achalti, he is telling the truth? The Rashi, a few lines up from the end, Rashi says, umayim yirtze lomar meizid hoisi, A person who says, when I ate the chalev, I did so knowingly. The witnesses can't clash with him on that. In other words, you have the two witnesses saying, you ate chalev, and he basically agrees with them. Yes, I ate chalev, but I did so willingly. Those two witnesses can't challenge him on that. Therefore, if he's already going to be telling us, I didn't eat the chalev whatsoever, he is believed. From that which they argue, so the Tanakamo and Rabbi Meir arguing in this case, namely the case where two witnesses say he ate chalev, and he responds, he denies that in the face of two witnesses. So from the fact that they argue here, Michlal de Resha, Eid Echad Omer Achalta, the Dayek Mina, in which we inferred Ha Ishtik Chayov, Divrei HaKol. They inference that we drew in the ratio was that if the subject remained silent, he would be obligated to bring a sacrifice. That's something that's not controversial. Everyone would agree with that. In other words, the machlokes appears in the seifa, but in the ratio there's no machlokes. Let's continue then in the Gemara. Resha, my taima ka mechayev rabbonon. My taima ka mechayvi rabbonon. In the Resha, why do the rabbonons agree that he's chayev to bring a korban when he remains silent? Ilemo mishum de mehemon. If it's because of the believability of the one witness, or the reliance upon the one witness, the ha trei ba'almo, two witnesses in general, the afagav de komakfishlu inu mehemni. Even though in general, when two witnesses testify and the subject counters them, he denies their testimony, the two are believed. The ka patri rabbonon. And nevertheless, in this case with the achilas chalev, the rabbonon exempt the subject from bringing a korban. So we see that the obligation of bringing the korban in the resha is not because of the ne'emonus, the believability of the witnesses. So to go over this last point, this realm of Achilas Chelev and the Shita of the Rabbonon, where we see the subject being exempt from the sacrifice, it cannot be an area in which it's an issue of witness reliability. And how do we know that? In general, two witnesses are all powerful. Even where the defendant contradicts them, we don't listen to the defendant. We will listen to the testimony of the witnesses. And yet here we see that the testimony of the witnesses has no power. When the defendant says I didn't eat it, the Rabbanan are willing to go along with the defendant's words. So that we see that here in the Seifa, we see that we're not, that the witness dependence or witness believability is not the factor. Therefore, in the Resha, where the fellow remains silent in the face of the testimony of one witness that you ate chalev, it's not a function of our believing the witness. Elolav mishum te ishtik. It's simply because the subject remains silent. Ushtika kohido damyo. And silence is tantamount to admission. So with all of this having been said, this is not the source for the believability assigned to one witness. Therefore, we come to our second house marking. Elo svora hi. It's an issue of logic. Midi dehave achaticha sofek shel chelev sofek shel shuman. We're going to parallel the case of the woman where one witness said your husband is dead, and she would go based on that marry someone else. We're believing the one witness based on this, the precedent of a piece of meat, sofek whether it's chelev, sofek whether it's shuman. The also aid echad v'omar bori li de shuman hu de mehemon, and the singular witness comes along and says, it is clear to me that this is shuman, that it is kosher material. Shuman, as opposed to chelev, chelev represents that which is unfit. Chelev, technically speaking, or ordinarily, is translated as forbidden fats, and shuman translated often as permissible fats. So if you have a piece of meat substance that you don't know whether it's chelev or shuman, and one witness comes and says, it's clear to me that it's shuman, we believe him, and you can go ahead and eat that piece. The Gemara says, mi domi, how can you use that as a precedent? Hasam lo is chazik isura. In the case of the meat that, whose identity was doubtful, there was never an assumed status of prohibition in that particular piece of meat. Hacha, in the case of the woman, is chazik isura de eshes ish. She had an assumed status of a married woman, and hence an assumed status of Isur, of prohibition. The ein dover sheba erva pachos mishnayim. And when you want to, let's say, establish a matter concerning erva, the erva is the realm of that which is permissible and that which is prohibited in the realm of marriage. Marriage-related laws are not established with any less than two witnesses. And if you are already want to parallel the case of marriage to the case of a piece of meat, ha lo damya elo lichaticha de vadai chelev. Imagine a case of meat that is known to be certain chelev. The also aid echa v'yama bori li de shuman have, and a singular witness would come along and say, it's clear to me that it is kosher. So lo mehemon, we're not going to believe him. If you have a piece of meat that's an established, known, forbidden piece, one witness isn't going to be believed to come and say that I know it's kosher. So at this point, we're raising a question. We don't see any source for believability of a singular witness. The Gemara responds, mi domi, how can you compare Hosam afilu asu bein mea lo mehemni. In the case of a piece of meat that we know is chelev, even if 100 come along and say it's kosher, we're not going to believe them. Hacha, in the case of a married woman, kevon dechi asu beitrei mehemni. If two witnesses would come and testify that the husband is dead, we would believe them. Hachanami lehemne. So too, here, in the case of one witness, let us believe him. Midi dehavi ad tevel hekdish v'koinomos. And there's precedent for this, and you find this in these other realms of halacha. Tevel is untithed produce, where one witness would come and tell us that it is tithed. Hekdish has to do with items that were sanctified, dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash. And koinomos, this is a type of dedication, which maybe as we go on in the Gemara, we'll explain it a little further. So we're saying that just like in the case, just like with regard to the piece of meat, if the piece of meat case where there was definite iser cannot be parallel to the case of the married woman where there is definite iser. In the case of the piece of meat where there was definite known status of being prohibited, no number of witnesses in the world is going to change that. But in the case of a woman whose status was known as being prohibited by virtue of her being married, two witnesses can come and undo that status. And just like two witnesses are believed, one witness is also believed. And We have precedent for the believing of one witness. We have a section of Gemara that's in brackets, but after this long section, we're still going to be left hanging, so to speak. And the question will be, well, he gufa menola, the case that you're citing to be a precedent for believing one witness, where do you know that case from? So that will lead us into a third approach that's presented by Rabbi Zeira in explaining why, in the case of the woman, do we in fact rely on the testimony of a single witness. So now that the structure has been laid out, we will read the bracketed section. We said that we will believe the one witness, just like in the case of Tevel, Hekdish, and Koinamos. Hi, Tevel, Hefi, Domi. What's the case of Tevel that you find our relying on one witness? E Didei, if it's one's own produce, and the owner is saying, it's true that you knew it was Tevel, but it has been tithed. So we believe him. If that's the case, it's not because we're believing one witness, but rather Mishum Debiyodoi Lasakno. It's in his power to tithe. It's his own produce. He can tithe it. So when he says it is tithed, we believe it not because of the power of one witness, but because it's in his power to rectify the situation, to tithe the untithed. Elo di acher. Rather, it's tevel, belonging to someone else. And one witness would be telling us, oh, that fellow's produce has been tithed. My kosovar, and further analysis. What do you hold? E kosovar tore mishalo al shel chaveru eino tzorch das bailim. If you say that a person can tithe from his own produce in order to exempt his friend's produce, and someone who does that, Torei Mishal Shechavir, doesn't need the acknowledgement of the owner of that other produce. Well, then, the fact that someone, so-and-so is telling us that his friend's produce has been tithed, it's not because we're believing him as one witness, but rather Mishum Debiyodo Lasakno. It's within his own power to tithe it, just like we said. Torei Mishal Shechavero, he doesn't even need the approval of the owner. V'i Kosovar Tzorach Das Bailim, and if you'll say that in order for Mr. A to tithe from his own produce on behalf of Mr. B, you need to have Mr. B's approval. The Omar Ano Yodano Bey de Mesakein, and the individual saying, I know that his produce has been tithed. He gufa menolan. Where do you know that from? Where do you know that? Where do you know by Tevel? You're telling me before this bracketed section that I'm going to believe one witness by Eishes Ish, just like I believe one witness by Tevel. Well, by Tevel, where do you know that from? Hekdish Nami. With regard to Hekdish as well, Hekdish has to do with that which has been sanctified to the Beis HaMikdash. And the issue would be that something that had been sanctified, one witness is coming to tell me that it has been redeemed. So that, here's a second example. We had Tevel, Hekdish, and Kanamos. There are three cases where something had an assumed status of prohibition, and one witness is coming to undo that by saying the prohibition is no longer there. So in the case of sanctified items, he would be telling me that the sanctified item has been redeemed. So let's analyze this. Hekdish Nami. Hekdish as well. Where do you see believability of one witness? E kedushas domim, if you're dealing with something that had been sanctified with regard to its value, someone sanctified a bookcase to the Beis HaMikdash, or he sanctified a horse to the Beis HaMikdash. Horses are not brought as sacrifices, nor are bookcases. And that is called Kedushas Domim. It has sanctity with regard to its value, its market value. And now the one witness is telling me that it has been redeemed, so you can use it for your personal benefit. The sanctity has been transferred onto something else. So if that's what we're talking about, when you say we rely on one witness regarding Hekdesh to tell us that it's been redeemed, Mishum Tabiyodo Lifdoso, the believability is not a function of one witness, but rather because he can redeem it. He has the power to redeem it. E Kedushas Haguf, and if we're believing the individual regarding something that had been sanctified as a sacrifice on the altar, well, Edidei, if it's his own animal, and he's claiming that it's no longer sanctified, Mishum Debiyado Litshuli Alei, because he's believed not because there is believability granted to one witness, but rather because it's in his power to undo the sanctification. He can go to a Talmud Chacham and describe that which he did, and he wants it rescinded. That's itshuli ole. He can be shoyal on it. He can request a sage to undo the sanctity. Elo di acher, rather, the idea of believing the one witness in the case of Hekdesh, it's regarding someone else's item that had been sanctified. Viomar Yodan obey the itshul mori ole, and he is telling us, I know that the owner of that sacrifice had been shoyal on it. He had it rescinded. They have the sanctity rescinded. Well, he gufa manolan, that very point itself, where do you know it from? Koinomos nami. Now, the realm of koinomos, you can see, is explained further in Maseches Nedarim. The word koinomos is the plural of word koinom. Koinom is a term that has different opinions as to what it means. Konam would be, for our purposes, an alternative expression to someone sanctifying something. Konam is like like saying korban, that someone wants to dedicate something and impose upon it sanctity. So you have an item concerning which someone had said konam zeh, Olai, and he's now informing us that it's no longer sanctified. So that even though it had an assumed status of prohibition, we're going to rely on what this fellow is telling us now. So now, an analysis of the issue of koinomos. If you say that an item concerning which you declared as koinom, before we explained, has to do with it's an alternative to the term korban. What we didn't say before, but we'll say it now, this is a situation where a person is attempting to prohibit benefiting from an item. And he says, he declares, koinom ze olai. I'm declaring this konam, I'm declaring this sanctified. Sanctified means, in this context, just like something that's sanctified, you are not allowed to benefit from. He is declaring it off limits to himself, using this term koinom. But we have to analyze. If you hold that something upon concerning which you expressed this term koinom has associated with it a me'ilah violation. What's a me'ilah violation? Everyone probably knows that if you dedicate something to the Beis HaMikdash and you then benefit it from it on a personal level, you have sinned. And that sin is called me'ilah. Now, if you hold that this concept of me'ilah applies to koinomos, thereby demonstrating that koinomos has in effect the equivalent of kedushas domim. Kedushas Domim, we spoke about this before. That was the case before where we said someone dedicated a bookcase to the Beis HaMikdash. That means he imparted upon the item money sanctity. Things like that are subject to redemption. So now we have an Eid Echad telling us that the item concerning which Konam was stated is no longer usser. So if you hold that Mi'ilah has relevance to the realm of Konamos, and that in effect is saying that Konamos absorb Kedushas Domim, so the believability, when he tells us that the item is no longer Konam, is no longer prohibited, is Mishum to be other Liftoso. It's because he can redeem it. That's why he's believed, because he has control over the situation. He has power to redeem it. And if you happen to take the opinion that Mi'ilah is not relevant to Koinomos, and rather, when someone declares something to be Koinom, he's basically saying, I declare this usser, I declare it forbidden. And it's the translation is Isur B'Alma, mere prohibition, who derochiv lua kasfei, is literally is riding upon his shoulder, which means, as opposed to imparting actual sanctity to it, by saying konam, you're saying the item is prohibited to you. Well, ididei, if it's his own item, mishum debiyado lichuliale, konam is a form of vow, and a vow is something that can be rescinded by approaching a scholar, a Talmud Chacham, to have it undone. So that's why when he tells us about an item that was declared konam, if it's his own item and he tells us that it is no longer prohibited, that's because he could easily go to a Chacham anyway and have the konam undone. Hello, the Achir. Rather, the item in question is not his own. He's telling us about someone else's item, the Omar, and this fellow tells us, Ano yodana di ichu more ole. I know that the owner of it he approached the Talmud Chacham and had the item freed up, the konam removed or annulled. He gufam anolan. Well, how do you know that under those circumstances, if a person comes along and tells us that the konam was the konam on someone else's item was removed, that we believe him? How do you know that? So at this point our issue is, how do you know that when one witness comes and says that so and so's husband died, the court will can give her give her a license to marry someone else? Where do we know that from? Omar Rabbi Zera, mitoch chomer shechmarta oleh b'soifa, hikalta oleh al betchila. From the knowledge that the woman will experience great deprivation at the end. That means, in the event that the original husband does show up, she loses out on so many things, as was featured in the Mishnah. She loses the ksuba and the mezonos and the peros, and she loses a lot of things. So she knows she's in for a lot. She's got a lot to lose. So with that knowledge, if she is going to marry a second husband, it must be she checked out the situation very, very well. And because of that, we allow her to marry a second man, because she can be relied upon to having checked out the situation very thoroughly. So because of the chomer, the severity that we will impose upon her, basofa, basofa means at the end, meaning in the event that the husband would show up, hilkata lo betchila, we are lenient with her at the outset, meaning enabling her to enter a new marriage. So you have this, we'll say, this push and pull situation, or because of the severity at the end, we can be lenient at the beginning. The severity at the end, we said, was the at the end, if the husband does show up, because of that severity, she won't get herself into trouble, and she'll have checked out the situation. Therefore, we can be lenient with her to enable her to marry a second husband at the outset. The Gemara asks, Lo lichmir, for lo lekel. Why not forego on all the severity, but at the same time not be mekil on her at the outset? So if it's a function of this chumra kula idea, why not just forego on the chumra and not allow the kula? Why is it then that we allow this woman to marry a second husband? The Gemara answers, Mishum iguna akilu ba rabbonan. Because of the alternative. Iguna means a situation where a woman is withheld. An ogen is an anchor. An anchor withholds a boat from continuing its voyage in the water. A woman whose husband is, a woman who is known to be married, but her husband is not around anymore, if we don't allow her to remarry, she's going to suffer a fate of a dismal future of remaining unmarried in this state of flux, where her husband's not around and yet she's not able to marry anyone else because she has the status of being a married woman. So because of iguna, because that's the alternative, the Rabbonon in fact were lenient. And it's with that factor that we say what we did, that will be lenient and rely upon her thorough checking out of the situation and concluding that her husband really is dead, and with that we rely on her checking and allow her to marry a second husband. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.